Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 295, my conversation with artist Kelly Horan. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. You know, I actually just got an email from Audible because I've been so busy preparing for the holidays and everything that I haven't actually been on the app. And it was like, hey, how's it going? Are you doing okay? And it also reminded me that I had 2 credits to spend every month. You know, when you do your monthly subscription fee, they give you a credit, and that credit gets you pretty much any book that you would like, and you can download it and listen to it anytime. I have clearly been super busy with the holidays, so I haven't been there, but it's kind of nice that they checked in, because I was like, oh, 2 credits, huh? Gonna get in, start listening to something. And, you know, maybe I will listen to stuff that pertains to the writing project that I'm doing. I am getting really deep into that kind of research, so that's fun. Or maybe it'll be something fun, something to relax and, you know, learn about something new. I can do it because I have Audible, and you can too. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your Audible account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. We put together a bunch of little pro tips on the website. There's a few sections where Chris made videos where he explains how certain things work and also like certain equipment questions are answered, but we're also available to talk with you about any part of the process. We've been doing podcasting for 5-6 years now, and, you know, we've been through the ringer. Sometimes it's going well, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes we have co-hosts, and sometimes we don't. And, you know, we just want to talk to you and help you. So if you are trying to create a podcast yourself and you're like, how do I get started? Or, man, I started to do this and I had my friends with me and now they're not doing it. What do I do? Contact us. We can guide you through what's going on. And, you know, if you need help in a larger sense, we can help you or connect you with the people that can. So contact us with podcastcadet.com. And if you happen to purchase something from us, like a service, you know, editing or whatnot, or if you want a workshop, a screenwriting workshop, a podcast writing workshop, you know, just mention code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off. Let us help. PodcastCadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with independent filmmaker and artist Kelly Horan. Kelly has written, directed, and produced quite a lot of films, like Maybe Shower and Summer League. And she also creates amazing collages and pyrography art pieces. Am I saying that right? Pyrography? Pyrography. Yep. In our conversation, Kelly and I talk about creating new worlds. We talk about the difference between making art and selling art. We go deep on the preparation required to do your best work. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 295, filmmaker Kelly Horan on learning through writing and revising. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. What was the things that you were doing to entertain yourself during the day or after school?
There were kind of 2 different sides to what I would do. One would be very like kind of organized, procedural. One of the things I vividly in my memory was like lining up marbles and then like moving them in like weird patterns and stuff.
Ooh.
I don't know why, but I loved, or like I used to wrap pennies, like penny rolls. And I thought that was just the best thing. And then it was just, you know, playing pretend, creating, you know, adventures and scenes whenever I had someone to like actually play with, you know, reenacting the Princess Bride over and over. We all wanted to be Wesley, you know.
Yeah, of course, of course. As you wish, you know. Mm-hmm. You get to yell. Yeah, absolutely. Who doesn't want to say that all the time? I'm so glad that Princess Bride was the movie that you guys were reenacting. When I was young, we were reenacting Dirty Dancing, and we definitely did not understand the undertones. And it was just a lot of dancing and telling baby to get out of the corner.
Yeah,
that was pretty much
takeaways,
right? Yeah, that's pretty much all you get when you're about eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the marbles and the pennies thing is super fascinating. It reminds me of that art, you know, where they do with sand, where they like build this beautiful mandala and then they like blow it away.
Yeah.
Like there's something beautiful about this, like the organization of the marbles that you then knock into them and they like become some different design, like, ooh, like dominoes or something.
Yeah, it's cool because when I think back on it now, it's sort of like that's obviously like the organized part of my brain. But then also like having like when you pull back and see something like a weird design or something like that, it all kind of plays into each other, which is kind of like, I guess how I feel as an adult, just, you know, I can express it better. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah.
It was fun. It was, you know, kind of, again, meditative, I guess, that I didn't know that as a kid though, but yeah.
No, I was thinking that exact word. I was like, it was like meditative. Like there's something about that. And also, you know, fascinating that you mentioned it, 'cause like my kid does that too. Like he takes all of his stuff and he arranges it on the table in this very specific order. And then like, sometimes he doesn't even play with it. He just like lays it across and he's like, mm-hmm. Good.
It feels so satisfying. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Man, you know what it made me think of whenever I see him do it, I'm like, hey, maybe this will be your job. In my 20s, I worked at the Gap in New York City, and it was a flagship Gap. So it was like had all the new stuff all the time. And so all of the displays were changed maybe every 2 days. Like everything in the whole store would be rearranged and set up when I came in the next day in a brand new design. And you're like, what is happening? And I found out that there was this whole scenic crew that worked the overnight. So like when we left, you know, at like 10 or 11, they came in and worked like 11 to 6 and like reset up the whole store with it just empty and put up the designs and stuff like that. And I was like, wow. What a fun job. Like, how cool. And that's what made me think of when my kid did it. And then when you brought that up, I was like, dude, it's like tiny set design. But like,
yeah, exactly. That's what I was just picturing when you mentioned that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I would hate to do that though. I remember working at Blockbuster and like when we have to rearrange stuff and it was just a pain in the ass. But I guess if that's like the one thing you're doing and you get to like get creative or something, it's probably not so bad, but like,
yeah. Yeah, they don't ever, those people never spoke to customers. So they definitely got the better end.
That's the dream job. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was my, that's always my favorite parts of retail is when I did not have to talk to the customers.
Absolutely.
They're like, who wants to do inventory? I'm like, me.
Yes.
They're like, really? Yeah, and people always think I'm going to be really friendly and extroverted too. And I was like, not in retail though. Just, this is a wasted talent right here.
Nobody wants to talk to anybody in retail. Yeah. My favorite thing in Blockbuster was literally just like checking the movies back in because it was just like, didn't have to talk to anybody. You're busy. I can't help you right now. You know, the whole deal. It was great.
You see this pile of videos? I have to get these done. Go talk to her. Oh my God, that's so funny. I love the idea that you worked at Blockbuster as well. So like a local Blockbuster, was it like the cool place to work where you grew up?
It was a place to work. It was, you know, honestly, it was really fun. It was when I was in college.
Oh, awesome.
And it was cool. It was fun. We watched movies. We played Soul Calibur and Metal Gear Solid. And it was right by the university. So it was cool. But we closed at like 2 a.m. So
Whoa. That
was not great. But yeah, it was cool.
Party blockbusters till 2 a.m. I clearly forgot that part of the whole equation.
It was a bit much, especially when you still had customers coming by at like 2:05 after we had like locked the door, and they were still like, no, I know exactly what I want, just let me in. And they never do. They spend a half hour walking around. So
that's why Blockbuster closed, because of you, late guy. Oh man,
that's it. You ruined it all.
That's it. The business model was only functional during the hours of operation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh man, that's fun. What a fun college job. I like that. How random. Yeah. I'm working at the Gap, you're working at Blockbuster. We're like nailing this. We're like having the best little jobs back in these retail days. I love it. Brand name baby.
Yeah.
So I like this idea that when you're a tiny child, you're already creating these tiny mandalas with marbles and whatnot. When did you first get into making art? Now, I know that you do both visual art and you do writing and filmmaking, but did visual art come first or writing?
Oh, that's a good question. I think visual art for sure, before I really knew how to like write words that meant anything. Hmm. Like you can do schoolwork and stuff, but until you kind of realize like you could tell a story through writing. But I always loved drawing. I used to like draw classic cars. They looked horrible, but I would do that. Always have like a little sketchbook and stuff. I remember I used to like bring it to school and make my friends go through and put like a check mark on the back of the ones that they liked the most. So I don't know what I was trying to do with that, but I like would have check marks and some of them would have five. And then I get really sad when the one I liked the most only had one, but yeah. Weird. Visual stuff for sure first. And then I think probably around like middle school, high school, I don't know, something like that. Like actually getting into like fiction writing and stuff and figuring that portion of it out.
Did you get into fiction writing because there was an inspiring teacher, or was it like The Princess Bride and you were like, hey, that guy's reading out of a book, I could do that?
Well, I always loved reading. That was something. I always loved reading fiction. So I just never connected really that I had something worth telling or I could come up with something. I think honestly, like it's just teenage angst. Where I'm like, I have so many feelings and thoughts and I have to get it out there. And so, you know, you write a little dead journal entry and then it starts whatever. But yeah, it's just, you know, teen angst turning into fiction. And that's kind of what really spurned that on.
Wow, that's great. That's great. You know, a lot of times it's like a teacher gives you an assignment and you do it, but this one was really born of your own creativity because, like we were talking about a second ago, you know, you get to different points in your life where you look at things differently. And like when you become a teen, that's like a big crossroads for like a new understanding of like who you are. And, you know, the idea that I have thoughts in my head and these thoughts need to come out and somebody cares about them. I mean, and I appreciate that you already had the book going where you were trying to get them to judge your classic cars. I mean, it's very, you know, there's a lot to getting an audience, you know, like we want people to look at what we make. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not trying to make art in a vacuum. So like, if I draw something, I want to show it to somebody and be like, what do you think about that? And I feel like, man, what a like real lesson that the one you like the most is the one that doesn't get as many checks. Like that's as real as I've ever, like if I could give anyone advice, it's like when you write a sketch show with your friends or when you write this thing, the one thing that you love the most, someone's going to go, I don't know, maybe we could cut that part. Like, and I don't know why. It's just like the world shooting daggers into you. You know what I mean? Like, every time when I was making my sketch show, the one that I loved the most would get like crickets. And I was like,
what's going on here?
How do you guys not get this? This is gold. This is the best joke and no one is laughing. Why? Like, it's so crazy. But it's like you're so on point trying to, and I appreciate that you continued to get them to judge your drawings. I feel like I'd do that once and I'd be like, yeah, I'm good. No thanks.
Well, and it's an interesting like thought of, what do you do with that? Do you then just do stuff to please other people or do you do stuff for yourself? So it's kind of, you have to weigh them both out because yes, it's not supposed to be made in like a vacuum, but it's also supposed to be for you, you know, and that's something I still struggle with today, mostly with the film stuff because that takes so much more resources and time and everything. Like, am I making this for me or am I making this for other people?
Yeah. It's weird because they do say, you know, make something you love, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm down for that because for two reasons. One, generally people work harder on something that they love, right? So that's helpful. And then also, if a person really loves something, it's also, I always feel like there's a little extra energy in there, like a little, something special, something magic that's added if a person is telling a story that really matters to them, right? But but you're right. I mean, it's the age old, you know, versus of art versus business. We have to be involved in the business. Somebody has to, I mean, you can make a film or a show and no one can come and no one can watch it. That it can be a thing. But the idea is that someone watches it and looks at it and wants to pay us for it, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, that's, I want to say like constantly the butting of heads between like, what do they, capital T, want? And what do I want to give them? You know?
Yeah. And I think it's kind of, it feels sort of like you're sharpening knives if you use both of them, because the idea is that, you know, you want to have express yourself to the fullest, but then be able to try and like separate yourself to see if whatever you're trying to communicate is being done so effectively from an outside perspective, because the entire point of it is to share a story. So if it's not coming across and people don't, you know, respond to it, then you have to kind of think why. And maybe that would help change the idea, how you approach it, if it's worth doing or not, or if it's just something internal that you should have.
Sometimes I wonder if it's not really a matter of like this idea. Like, I like what you're saying about this idea that like, if you write, sometimes you write a story and you need another person to be like, hey, there's this whole section about John. Who's John? And you're like, that's her dad. And you're like, oh my God, at no point did you tell us that was her dad. Wow, that changes the whole story if it's her dad. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, there's that. There's definitely like edits and like, it's very helpful to have, you know, an sort of a safe audience up top. You know, you do a reading or something and they're like, yeah, I have no idea why there was that whole section in the fast food restaurant. And they're like, it's set in a fast food restaurant. You're like, it is? Like, yeah, that's where we are, you know, stuff like that. But I think it's also interesting, this idea of like, sometimes art that is coming out of you might not fit the culture of the time, right? Like, I've talked about this with a bunch of people because I feel like during COVID, there was a lot of inspiration to create stuff that reflected what was actively going on, right? There's something to be said for art that is just sort of like, this is what I came up with during these circumstances. And then they're the ones that are essentially like, let's write a story about what's happening right now. And the problem with that is, it's great, write that movie, but no one wants it for 10 years at least.
Exactly.
Like, there, you should definitely write it. You should definitely keep, and I've thought about this a bunch of times, like, I wish that I had kept a better record of, like, how it felt, because, like, the emotional roller coaster of the last 2 years was something that, like, I wish I was, like, a journaler, because I really feel like it was an interesting thing that I will reflect back on as a life lesson. But because I didn't write it down, instead, it's just sort of a vague memory of what happened. Like, yeah, I remember being scared for a while, like, and not able to do anything. And then I was like, hey, I should probably start doing podcast interviews, because that would be a good use of my time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's hard to know. And thankfully, we have some art that came out, a few little teeny weeny things that, like, popped up. And it's like, okay, that's what we can have. But, like, no one's going to want the movie about what's going on right now. No one wants to hear about it. In fact, oh my God, it's so hard. I'm watching The Morning Show right now.
Oh, me too.
It's a great show, but they're actively dealing with COVID as it's happening. And, like, I know for a fact that they filmed it in the height. Like, it's not like yesterday that they filmed this show and now we're watching it. No, there were, they're doing this show where every day, every one of the people that you see and the people you don't see have been COVID tested. And they're like scared, sitting in trailers, not talking to each other for 12 hours while making this thing. And yet they made that the topic of the show, COVID. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know how this is going to go. Now, I'm invested. I want to watch it. I'm super excited. I will wait week to week to find out what's going on for sure. But, like, I worry when I saw that. Are you all caught up on it? Yes, yes, I am all caught up on it. But, like, it's so hard to imagine this is coming out. Like, it's so difficult. Like, I'm so glad they're taking certain angles the way they are, because I feel like it's less harsh. Like, I loved Inside by Bo Burnham, and I think it should be, like, kept on record as a historical document for sure. But can I watch it again? No. I watched it. I experienced it. I love listening to a song here and there, maybe.
But that's what I was going to say. I have friends who listen to the songs, like, outside of the like watching it, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It's good. Good for him. You know, I want him to do well, you know, someone needs to give him a hug, you know, but at the same time, like, yeah, I'll watch that again in 10 years and be like, that, this is a true depiction of what happened, like, in a way that no other art that I've seen truly depicts. Like, when they look back on it in 100 years, they can watch that and be like, oh, this is how people felt. Yeah. Yeah, it is. A ton. Hundreds of thousands of people felt like this. Like, that's what was going on. And they can really see it. And it's a reflection of the time. But right now, no. So sometimes, to bring it back to what we're really talking about, making art for us versus the audience, sometimes I think you have to do what the audience wants if that's the way you're writing. If you're writing to win a contest or you're writing to sell a script, yeah, you have to think about who's the audience of this, who's going to listen to it, what's the purpose. But if you're writing something for yourself, just like a new idea, even if when you finish reading it, you're like, oh man, culturally they are not ready for this or whatever, that doesn't mean it's not a valid thing to write. And it can go on the shelf and wait. Like, okay, well, I will make this movie in 2050. That is what's going to happen. That when then they'll be ready. You know, fingers crossed we still have electricity. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to think too far into the future with that stuff.
No, no, don't. But as far as, like, art goes, sometimes it's okay to write a story that, like, you know, other people don't like, I think, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's more of considering how it looks. Because I think, I mean, I'm this way, and I'm sure a lot of writers are too. You get stuck in your own brain as far as, like, how it feels. And so the emotion that you're feeling while you're writing it, you imbue the words and everything with that, whereas it might not necessarily come through to somebody who's not in my brain. So that's kind of what I meant for that. And so kind of taking yourself out of that and having to learn to kind of be outside of who you are and your emotions, and then trying to read it in a different way from somebody who doesn't already know the intent of the work, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That can be pretty wild. So
yeah, it's hard.
You mentioned that your first foray into fiction was when you were a teen starting to write some things. And you mentioned that you went to college. Did you go to college for writing or art of any kind?
Yeah, college. I started in media arts, which was like the film program there, and then switched to journalism. And then switched back to film, and then finally graduated with film. So it was kind of going back and forth between those two, trying to decide how I wanted to tell stories and what stories I wanted to tell.
But by the time you got to college, you were fully into the idea of this is going to be my path. I'm going to tell stories. It was really just a matter of how.
I don't know. I was lost. I did something, mostly took gen eds and was hoping that something kind of, you know, stood out. Just kind of.
Yeah.
It was a mess.
Yeah, it's hard to find your path sometimes. And college is not always great for, you know, inspiration, for sure.
No, and it's weird because you go right from high school into college. And it's like, I remember working so hard in high school to get good grades so I can get a scholarship, so I can go to college. And then it's like immediately no break. You just go straight in and you're having to be an adult on your own, living alone and, you know, going to, you know, six classes, a week or whatever, you know, it's just like, I don't know. The pressure is there and you're expected. So many people say, oh, I'm going to be pre-med. I'm whatever. I'm all this stuff. And then, I don't know. You're just trying to, one, not disappoint yourself and stuff when you're going through stuff and trying to figure things out. Like you feel like you should know what you're doing. So you don't waste this opportunity, but then also just not having the time or, I guess, energy to really discover who you are and what you want.
Yeah.
College was weird.
Yeah, I hear that. I definitely hear that. I went to a super weird college as well. I did all theater and I didn't do anything else but theater. Like a lot of people were other majors and they did theater. And I was like, that seems like a waste of time. No, thank you. I'm just going to be here in this theater. I even made sure that my work study was in the theater because I was like, come on, what am I going to do? Something else? Yeah. No. I was like, guys, this is where I live now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't know what I was supposed to do when I got out. You know, my school was a lot about putting on shows, and I feel like I learned how to actively make a play. Like, here's a play, we're going to work on it. Great. I know what the director is, the stage manager, all the like little parts and how to make costumes and stuff like that. But then, like, how do you do that in the world? Who lets you? What do you need to do? Nobody even mentioned, I didn't even find out until years later that you had to buy the rights to the plays, right? You'd think that would be in there. You think they'd mention that part. That seems like an important part, right? Because it's like, if you're going to go out after school and do the same thing that you've been doing, oh yeah, you guys like making plays. Let's do it. Great. Yeah. Rule number one, call Samuel French and get, then pay him money so you can use these scripts that they've got going on. Oh, I have to pay someone? Yeah, that's how it works, you know.
I will say that probably my most useful classes, I was also pre-law.
Whoa.
I know. Sorry, I just want to be a lawyer. But I was pre-law, and so I was taking some of those classes and still learning about IP law and then, new media legal stuff was probably the most useful information that I learned for all of my film stuff.
Oh, wow. That is actually very helpful. So like your school was hip to what was new happening in law, huh? That's really great that you were able to like learn that. I mean, I feel like when I went to college, they were still, they weren't teaching PowerPoint yet. Like I remember graduating and then they were like, they just started teaching it. And I was like, what? I need that. And they were like, sorry. So the fact that you're learning about like laws about new media, I'm like, yes, great. They told you that? I didn't even know you had to have a legal representation until maybe like 2 years ago or something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, yeah. The laws involved with making art and entertainment, it's an important subculture you really need to understand. What an amazing bit of information that you got.
Yeah. And the biggest takeaway was don't try to do it yourself. Get a lawyer.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It's a great idea. I'm going to get a lawyer tomorrow. That's a good idea. That's so cool. What college was it that you went to?
University of Arizona.
Oh, okay. Great. Awesome. Is that where you're from, Arizona?
I am, Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, okay. So when you went to University of Arizona, did it feel not quite far enough away? Do you wish that you had had a farther away adventure?
Not at that point. That was fine. Yeah, it was fine. I, you know, got a full ride scholarship there and I moved out on my own when I was 17. So that was, you know, enough of a big change for me to do that. And then my now husband was also going to school there. So,
awesome.
It fit.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got one good thing out of it.
Yeah.
So at what point in your, life post-college did you begin to embrace that you yourself were a writer and that you had stories to tell? And how did you connect with a community to help you tell them?
Yeah. So I remember like that really happened when we moved to Austin. I remember we connected with some people and I never really felt like I was sort of part of their group, but I knew that, I wanted to do stuff. And I know that, you know, I wasn't included on sets or, you know, whatever, don't know why, but I wasn't. And so I'm like, well, how can I be a part of this in some way? And, you know, writing is a solitary thing to do. So I was like, I can write something. And so then I wrote a feature film and then we made it. So we asked some other people to help and we still have people that we're working with today. Like the last short that I just did has someone that was in the first feature that I wrote. So it's kind of cool building a community that way.
Yeah, absolutely. From just the people that you trust and like the experiences that you had, it's like we work together well. We had a good time together. Let's keep doing that. That's awesome.
That's definitely been my philosophy is trying to find people that I want to be around and I want to work with and that are good at what they do and then just keep doing it. I mean, obviously, I'm not really making money off of this. So it's got to be, you know, pleasant and nice and not like people yelling at each other or anything. So it's definitely a priority for me.
Yeah, truly for the love. Yeah, for the love of the projects. I think it's so amazing that you just, first of all, I like how you just sort of quickly gloss over. So I wrote a feature. Yeah, that's fine. Oh, it's, I just wrote a very long screenplay. It's fine. It's what you do. Like, how did that get done? How did you, I mean, did you just have an idea and really just like churn it out? Like, did it just like fall out of you, this story? Or was it like a couple of years of working on something?
Yeah, I had no business writing it, really. I didn't have any idea
what
I was.
You did it and you made it, so who cares?
I
did it.
I was, you know, it feels like I was very, I didn't know what I was doing, really. I hadn't, like, this. I had one screenwriting class in my film school, right? But I just knew I wanted to write this thing. I knew I wanted to, you know, make something. And so I kind of, having moved away from Tucson and family drama and stuff, and some sort of traumatic stuff that had happened there. And having space from that, I knew I wanted to write about some of that. And so I was just, you know, outlining in a notebook and stuff, and then writing it when I could, after the good old day job. And yeah. And then I asked, my husband if he wanted to direct it, 'cause I was definitely not ready to direct. But he kind of saw a, connection that he had with the film too. So that was great.
Man, that's awesome. That sounds so nice to have, you know, I'm glad that you were able to find the moments, you know, in the evening. You know, that's the hardest part. A lot of people really think that, oh, I can't be a writer. I have a job. It's like, everyone can be a writer. You just need to find the tiny moments here and there to put it down. And no matter how long it takes, just keep chipping away until you finish and you have a draft or, you know, multiple drafts and whatnot. And you know, it doesn't matter that you have to work somewhere during the day or, you know, at night or whatever your job is. Like, there is time. There is time for you to make stuff. And also, you know, a community that you can build bit by bit. I think that's a really hard part too. Like, you mentioned, oh, I wasn't really hanging out on the sets. And I totally understand that. Like, I have such a hard time making friends unless it's work related. Like, if we're working on a project together, great. We are best friends. Like, that is happening. But like, if I were to be like, hey, let's go have coffee, I feel like the weirdest person ever. And like, that's part of life, you know, and like meeting people, especially when you move to a new place. And and sometimes, you know, you kind of want to have a coffee with a person before you ask them if they'll be the costume designer on your project. Because like, what if they're not great? You know, you want to have a little bit of time, but man, unless it is work related, I am like just so socially awkward. And that's why every interaction I guarantee you and I have ever had is through a work related scenario. Like,
I'm trying to think. I don't know.
Yep. Maybe. Every single situation was either like an event that you guys were part of and I was working for a theater, or I was, you know, working for the festival and like I do the Q&As, or, you know, we happen to see each other at the same screening because we know who made the thing. And I still consider that work because, you know, we're artists watching other people's art. And so we're here to support them as artists, you know, especially at the festivals. I like being local artist at the festival, because then the people who come in town, they're all like, oh, you're part of the vibrant community. I am indeed part of the vibrant community of Austin.
I love that.
But then, you know, I finish the Q&A and I like slink home quietly by myself. You know what I mean? It's like, it's hard to make friends and connect with people. So, you know,
100%. I feel you on that. Like, I met two of the friends that I have in Austin. We had started, me and a couple of friends from Tucson. Well, one that had moved to Austin a little bit after us. We started a like DIY geek, website and podcast and stuff. And I remember we hosted a Halloween party for the website, at Kung Fu Saloon, and we had like a photo booth thing. And, this girl came up and she was, I was trying to remember who she was dressed up as. I think it was like, she was with a guy and they were Jake and Finn from Adventure Time. And so, we like became friends. Like I just literally was like, this girl's cool. And so like 2 days after, I was like agonizing. I'm like, I kind of want to like Facebook message her. Like, I don't know. And so then I like actually like messaged her, but it was like, you meet initially through sort of like a work thing, and yeah. And yeah, we're friends today still. So that's good. But
oh, wow. Good for you.
Yeah, it's, well, I don't meet many people, so it's, you know, hold on to what you have.
sure, I guess, yeah. I tend to meet tons of people and do the vague acquaintance with all kind of scenario.
I'm so bad at that. I really, like, we go to festivals, like, I went, like, Elena went to, I think, Hill Country with me, and she's just amazing at networking and talking to people. And I'm just sort of like standing there so awkwardly, like, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know you. I mean, it's just horrible. And I'm like, this is not serving the film or anybody any good. So I should learn to get better at that for sure.
I think it's probably all right. You're a mysterious writer. You know, you just stand there. You don't even have to drink a cocktail. You just have to hold one and look kind of like, and laugh occasionally at unusual things. And they're like, huh. You're like, did she just laugh at tea kettle? Okay. You know, like, yeah, I mean, if I'm not meeting people under the pretense of like, let me convince you to take an improv class, then I'm usually trying to pretend that I'm mysterious, and I don't think I could ever. I'm the opposite of mysterious. I'm like, let me tell you my deepest, darkest secret, stranger who I've just met.
yeah, the overshare, thinking that it's appropriate. Done that. Yep.
Oh my God, so much. I'll tell you deep, crazy stories. Though I do keep a few in my pocket for parties, because it's like, well, this is one that seems scandalous but really isn't, and people like hearing it. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's hard to do the schmoozing part of the art when you're doing when you make movies. So like, there's a lot of going to festivals and like. So how, after you made that first feature, how did you figure out that festivals were a thing to submit to? Because I feel like I only learned when I moved to Austin and found out Austin Film Festival was a thing. And then shortly, maybe 5 or so years into acknowledging that it existed, I was like, wait, what? Oh. So you get in there and you give them your, oh, okay. Like, I just didn't understand how it worked. And like I said, in my college, they weren't handing you a, this is how you do it in the real world packet when you left. Like, so how did you know that that was even an option?
Well, they did. I mean, we knew about it in college and stuff. We actually had a couple of classmates who played Sundance with their film at one point. So like, we knew like, oh, there's an aspirational one to get to, and we know people who got there. So I think ever since then, I've sort of felt that like competitive kind of nature to it. But I've always known they're there. It's just a matter of kind of understanding how they work and how you need to adjust your strategy based on the film and your goals for the film, which was not something that anybody taught. Something that I have definitely noticed from beginner filmmakers starting out is they all think that the movie is going to get into South By or Sundance, and they are convinced of it, when really it probably is not going to. It like definitely is not going to. And that's not a bad thing. And you can find something, another festival that will really support and showcase your work.
Yeah.
Don't waste your money on all the big festivals, basically. That was the big thing I learned through trial and error.
Yeah. Yeah, that can be hard, because there are definitely ones that are like, don't let them fool you. This is actually just for professionals and other professionals. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, mm-hmm. they're not looking for your film. They're looking for the new Duplass Brothers film. Like, it's not, you know, right. Yeah. The first couple of years when I was like, wow, there's some big celebs that bring movies here. And I was like, oh yeah, no, this is not an independent film festival. Yeah. I see what's going on here. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, this is just a new place to release. Oh, all right. Great. All right, cool.
Yeah.
When you see, like, when you go to a party at, let's be honest, when I work a party and I happen to see all these famous people, I'm always very suspect of what it is, right? Like, I did the first theater festival that I ever did was all famous people. And I was just like, what the heck is this all about? And like, it was just such a weirder vibe. Like, before I even learned how to really do regular theater, like at an actual theater with professionals and stuff like that, I was thrown into the heightened state of like, and the actor on your thing is Gwyneth Paltrow. And you're like, hello, I will be happy to help you with your costume here. You know, like, and then of course, famous people have like special rules. Like, it's not like, oh, just be nice to people. It's like, be nice to her, but also make sure that you always have a chamomile tea that's warm, that's near. That's not like a real thing. You know, Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't require you to have chamomile tea.
Royal family but, or something.
But yeah, it's something like, rules. Yeah, there's like a thing. And the weird thing is, I learned early the famous person hierarchy, meaning like, so there was this big, there was one play and it was a ton of people in it, right? And there were like three big name famous people. And then there were about six medium level famous people. By medium level famous people, I mean people like you and I know who they are. Other people don't know who they are, right? Like they're like, oh, the guy from this thing? Yes, but we know his name, you know, things like that. And then there were theater people like, this woman has been on Broadway 5,000 or 6,000 times, you know, that level. But it was still somehow the film people were held in higher regard, given more things, told they were better. And it's like, huh, okay, all right, interesting. Yeah. So that was my first experience too, where it was like, there's this separation, mm-hmm. In the world. It's not just professional and, you know, amateur. That's just one division. Then you get into professional and there's 1,000 more tiers of, oh, you got to do this. Oh, and if you're not like this, oh, no, oh, you don't have an agent. Oh, you're not equity. Like, yep. I was like, I'm 18. I signed up for the festival and they said, yes, you can be an intern for free. And I was like, great. But, you know, I like the idea that you had the experiences to go to the festivals. I'm sorry that you had to trial and error South By and Sundance so many times before realizing that maybe that wasn't the right venue for you. Mm-hmm. But one thing you mentioned, and I wonder if you could expound on that, is you mentioned that like creating, when you create the films and you know that you're going to submit them to festivals, you have to like finesse them a different way than if you were to say create them in a, I don't know, with another audience in mind. And I wondered, is it like, oh, I know this festival and they really like stuff about women
I never consider a festival when it comes to making a film. It's more of the strategy afterward, or even in pre-production, because you want to plan for dates. You want to plan for like, well, this one because it's cheaper if you submit by this date and stuff. Mm. So planning production, post-production, so that you can get stuff in there at a specific time. Oh, and then also, because I don't have an infinite amount of money, I'm not going to submit to every festival under the sun. So kind of looking at, okay, well, like, especially with, my last short film, A Grievance with Gravity, like to me, it's like sci-fi-ish. It's genre-ish, but it's also kind of comedic. It's also kind of dramatic. So it's trying to pick out what would showcase it best, what type of festival, what audiences would appreciate it best. So I definitely leaned into the genre and sci-fi stuff. And I think that was a great decision because they loved it. I think, especially in genre festivals, they're always looking for something new and different that kind of like transcends and isn't just, you know, spaceship stuff or something. Obviously those are awesome, but like having something else that's maybe a little more subtle too. So I thought that was a perfect fit for it.
Yeah. That's really smart. Now, I know that you and Phil both make movies. Do you always make them together or do you make them separately sometimes? How does that feel as a creative process?
Yeah, we made one. Well, okay, so our first feature we made together, obviously, that was Summer League. And then we split up and did separate stuff to lesser success, sort of, in my opinion. And then I needed a break from like being a big part on set or like writing anything or whatever. And so I really was just sort of producing. So I got to kind of flex those muscles more for him. And then I started wanting to get into directing and writing again. And so he's been really supportive with like editing and shooting some of the stuff too. So I think it's really a matter of like what bandwidth we have you know, as individuals and interest level and, you know, what the best fit for support is.
But you guys like both create projects separately and then like, you know, have like dinner time production meetings where you decide whether or not you're going to like work on projects together or separately?
Far too often. Yeah, I think because he's kind of in a lull right now and trying to figure out what he wants to do next or whatever. And I'm
sure
a creative flurry the last, you know, few years. And so I'm like, every time we sit down for like a beer somewhere or something, and I'm like, well, what about this? Do you think that? And I'm just like, seriously, like talking his ear off about stuff. So he's been patient with that and, you know, very honest, which is great. But yeah, we usually end up both kind of writing our own ideas, and then it's just a matter of what we want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice that you guys met so early and are able to be each other's team. That must be nice to have each other's back.
It is. It's good. And then you always have conflict and tension and stuff. Sure. I think that's part of the struggle with having, you know, two creative people doing kind of the same thing and wanting to do their own project or having their own voice. So sometimes we'll talk about writing something together and we'll have this idea, and then we both have just completely different views on the story or the characters. And then it's usually one person being like, never mind, I don't want to do it, you take it, something like that. So
yeah, I hear that. My husband likes to contribute ideas, but he does not do any of the writing. He'll be like, hey, I had this crazy idea. And it's usually some funny, like he helped me write a number of comedy sketches where he'd just like wake up from a dream and be like, what about this? And I was like, okay, all right. I like that. I like that. One of the favorite ones that he came up with, this was on a road trip. We were driving to Houston and all of a sudden he goes, what if a guy's balls turned into a dove and flew away? And I was like,
whoa.
Well, I don't know what would happen. And so then that turned into a comedy sketch that I played like 20 times. And it went really well. And I felt great about it. And I was like, what a super weird idea. Because I remember telling them, like, I was like, okay, we're going to read this new sketch that I wrote. And it's weird. So strap in.
That's like, amazing. Okay. Oh, my God. I love that.
But it's like, he'll just throw ideas at me like that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Wow. So for you, like, I love that you're in a creative flurry right now. I like that phrase. And I like that, you know, you have some cool ideas. How do you usually, you know, work on them? Do you have like notebooks? Do you have like a thing on your phone where you write down ideas? How do you keep them all together and then, you know, figure out how you're going to go and pick your next idea?
Yeah. So usually what I'll do is I'll write them down. Like if I have a bunch of ideas, I'll put them in a note on my phone, and then I will create Google Drive folders for each one of them and then start a Google Doc for the outline for each one of them. I have to come up with a title before I can start writing anything for it. Otherwise, I can't think. And then once I have the Google Doc, I don't write the outline in there. I write it in a notebook. And then once I write it in the notebook, I transcribe it from the notebook to the Google Doc. And then I will go off of the Google Doc and write it in like the screenwriting software. It's not efficient.
But hey, if it works for you, absolutely. I mean, like I have, as you can see, I have handwritten notebooks for tons of things. And sometimes I can't help but just write actual notes. And I have, you know, piles and piles of stuff. There's one story that I've been working on for a long time, and I have notes for it everywhere. Like I have paper notes, I have Google Docs, I have random Samsung notes in my phone. I've got like, you know, recorded messages when I was driving one time and I was like, what if this is happening? And, you know, and I'm like, how is this? And a lot of it I don't even use, you know, but it's just sort of like, okay, my mind is still working out this idea. When you come at writing your stories, are you inspired by like a character or a premise, or do you generally have like a plot first and foremost? Why do you start?
Yeah, it's definitely a premise. It's always sort of what you said your husband was like, well, what if this, what if, you know, this happened? And then sort of thinking like, well, what perspective do I want to do that from? And then it's the plot. So, it shouldn't be secondary, but it ends up being secondary for me. It's more of like exploring the idea and the person and the emotions. That's definitely what interests me the most and sort of what I go off of. So plot is a struggle for me.
No, it's hard because premise is like an umbrella from which thousands of ideas could come. So, yeah. Like, you can have any what if, and then you could write 1,000. That's how they come up with, like, you know, short story competition prompts. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, any premise can lead. And I love the idea that after you pick your premise, you decide the perspective of the way you're going to tell this story. Because I think that is a really interesting thing. And also, like, you know, it helps once you decide that perspective, it helps you then to lean towards one possible plot line versus another, right? Because if it's like, well, what if this thing exploded in the middle of this town? Okay, well, am I going to tell the perspective of the people who were near the explosion or far away from the explosion? Okay, great. Well, are things going well for them or not well for them, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's not only plot, then you're thinking about like storytelling structure mm-hmm. and like even screenplay structure. Speaking of which, how did you get into that? Now, was that part of your college education? Did they like teach you how to do like screenplay format and story format? Was there a lot of discussion of like, you know, the hero's journey in college?
Well, I had one screenwriting class and they taught us the software and that was fine. I mean, you need to know how to click the buttons and write the stuff and everything. But I think for me, the most useful part of that class and probably something that I still like think about when I'm writing was we had to write like a 5-page non-dialogue short. And I think it was using, you know, film to tell a story without people talking a lot. So a lot of my films don't have a lot of dialogue. And I really like having the visuals show like the story and the emotions and stuff. So I think that kind of made me think about storytelling and not just because, I mean, everyone refers to like Clerks and really dialogue heavy films and stuff. And I love those, but it never felt like me. So I think doing that one kind of made me sparked something where I'm like, okay, this kind of fits a little bit better.
Yeah. Is there like a famous film that you think of that is more you?
Ugh.
It's okay if you don't have one. You mentioned that Clerks wasn't you, and I totally vibe on that. Like, I get that, yeah, both from knowing what you've made and also, like, you know, I'm also not Clerks.
So I think I have, like, aspirational ones where I'm like, I dig this. This is sort of the vibe I want to go for. I'm not nearly there, but, like, John Carpenter films are really, like, my jam. And so wanting to, because there's a lot of, you know, long shots of where nobody says anything, you know, no cuts, stuff like that. That's sort of what I'm aspiring to. Kind of weird, not for everybody, you know.
Yeah, I like that too. I feel like that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. See, it doesn't have to be for everybody, it's just for us. It's cool.
That's the frustrating thing for Phil, because he's like, yeah, but it works because he's John Carpenter. Like, it'll work because he's so good at it. So you got to have something, you know, plot-wise. I mean, not whatever, but.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, sometimes you watch these old movies and they're like classics now, but when they came out, they weren't classics. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, people didn't like them. It's like it had to take 20 years and a bunch of like, you know, Saturday evening film retrospectives on, you know, Channel 56 to like be your, to finally become the cult classic that it is today. I mean, you know.
That's so true. And you know that there were some people from the beginning that just loved it too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's very true. That, you know, they weren't successful necessarily at the beginning.
I wish I could remember the name of this film, but there was this random film festival. It wasn't even Austin Film Festival. It was just like some guy. It was during South By, but it was it was a non-official film festival guy that came to the theater and put up maybe 10 films in a day. And one of them, the last one, the one that was like the big draw, was this, it was the 20th anniversary of this wild romp of a cult classic thing. And I had never heard of it, but the theater was packed with people who were like quoting the movie as it was going on. And it was so weird. And there was like, the plot was like, what is happening? Like, is that guy dead? I think he is. Like all sorts of weird characters. And it was just sort of like almost like a Cheech and Chong thing where it's like, here are some characters that you just follow along on their day, right? Okay. But it was like these two characters just have 1,000 different adventures with 1,000 different wacky personalities from the beginning of their day to the end of their day. And it was such a crazy thing. But I was like, I've never heard of this movie before. It's fun. I'm enjoying watching it. But look at all these people that came out to like see it, that were psyched. Like at the end of the movie, they did a Q&A and a few of the actors 20 years later were there to like talk. And the people in the audience were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're here. Like it was like, and I was like, who are these people? Like, but it was just this small niche group that loved it and was super into it. And it was this celebration of an idea. And it was so inspirational to me that, like, these people aren't famous and they weren't trying to be famous. Like, the one of the guys that was the lead in it was like literally wrote for Al Jazeera. Like, he was a journalist now. Like, he wasn't even doing film anymore or acting or anything. And he was just like, yeah, it was cool in my 20s. Like, and you're like, you're like, but the reaction to it was so huge. And, you know, that's the ideal, I think, is to just have a small, dedicated, like, excited audience that's like, oh my God, I love what you're doing. This is so cool. Like, total goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of, okay, so this is so affirming for me right now. So like, okay, so I can do my small stuff. I can do my weird ideas and whatever. And you don't have to, you know, think about, you know, I don't know. But it's just nice thinking that you're very right. There's an audience for something out there. There's some people who will love it.
Yeah. And the beauty of us having the internet, the loveliest part about us being in the current technological generation that we're in is that so much stuff is just available. Like you can put stuff out and, you know, if it's out there, some people are like, hey, did you hear about this thing? Check out this link. Like, and then somehow a million people watch something and you're like, what? You know, like, or it gets picked up, you know, like a couple of the shorts that I did Q&As for Austin Film Festival a few years ago, I saw like on Amazon. I'm all like, hey, look at that thing. Good. You know, like, as long as it's can be in front of some eyes, I think like, you know, you make it for people to watch it. And as long as a couple people can watch it and then like have a good time, even if it's just there to inspire, like, do you ever work on a project? And I swear these are connected ideas. Do you ever work on a project and like totally change it like midstream? Like you ever start writing like a screenplay and then you finish it and you're like, nope, it's not going to be Jenny's story anymore. I've decided it's Tom's. And like, you totally changed the whole perspective.
Oh yeah. I actually did that. So I'm working on a feature, too, called Neon Sunset. And I wrote multiple drafts of this film, from a PI's perspective. And then after I sat with it and let it sit, I'm like, this isn't right. This isn't good. 6 months later, I pick up, cause I'm like, I still like the idea, just whatever. And I'm like, okay, no, let's do it from the girl, the dominatrix point of view. That's way more interesting. And so having her be the lead and then do that and completely rewrote the story and everything. And yeah, so absolutely that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like as long as the idea is still knocking around in your brain, if mm-hmm. it's not, like, if it's done, there are definitely things I've written and been like, okay, so that's good.
Yep.
Like, whatever what happens to it after here, great. Oh, yeah. That's the other thing, too. When you get used to making, if you ever write a sketch comedy or anything that's going to be performed on stage, you have to fully accept that only 40% of the words, if you're lucky, are going to be said on stage. They're very likely to change them and sometimes the joke and all sorts of things about your sketch, you know, because it's not, you know, sometimes people aren't great with memorizing and also sometimes they think they can make it funnier, you know, and you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But so in my writing, I have been very open to, I guess, killing my darlings. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I finished writing it. I feel done with it. Now I will let it go to its next level, right? Is there a point in your process where you like let go of the piece of art and let it become what it needs to in the larger process of filmmaking?
So I think usually that happens when we actually get into production, if I'm not directing it, or even if I'm directing, I mean, it's going to become something different. Whatever you had on the page is going to end up changing in some way, either due to time, budget, location, whatever. But if I'm not directing it and I just wrote it, then, you know, that's the director's film now. So if they want to change something to tell the story that they see there, then that's theirs. But otherwise, if I have projects that I just wrote and I'm like, okay, I'm done with it, I don't need to see it anymore. I have so many of those where I'm like, I got it out of my system. It's going to sit here and just be on a shelf for a while. And I might never revisit it. It's going to collect virtual dust. And that's good and great. Cause I feel like it's sort of, you know, learning through writing, and deciding what I actually want to make or not.
Yeah. Plus, sometimes there needs to be a little bit of a creative catharsis, you know, mm-hmm. like you have to get the idea out.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been stuck on ideas before where I'm like, I have to finish this in some way. I have to get it out there because like everything else is like blocked basically until I do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm now all of a sudden in my head about some ideas that I have that are like sitting on a virtual shelf being like, hey, you should write me, but what's my story? I was like, I don't know. I have your premise and I don't have your perspective or your plot. I don't know.
And randomly you'll have a shower thought and you'll be like, oh yeah, that's it. Like,
yeah. 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 Oh man. The act of writing and the inspiration to get yourself through it. There's so much effort like that comes from within. And then there's so much like just like letting the world inspire you or like, yeah, like you said, like shower thought where you're mm-hmm. like, I'm going to relax and let my brain allow, you know, get out what it needs to get out. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The best ideas in the world in the shower, in the car when I can't write it.
But it's good because it gets your ideas going and it's, you know, it's just meant for brainstorming and then you have to write it. And that's, I mean, I know people are supposed to like love writing if you're a writer or whatever, but I find it difficult, partly because of time, you know, with the job and everything, but then, you know, disconnecting from your life and putting yourself in this other world and stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It's a skill and it's a craft like anything else. So there's no reason it should be easy.
Yeah. One thing that I realized, I've been taking this writing class on Mondays, and so we get a few hours in the time to write, just to sit and write. And sometimes I feel like it takes me like the first hour just to warm up. You know, I'm writing a little bit, but mostly I'm like collecting ideas. I'm doing a little bit of research. I'm trying to figure out like, okay, what am I going to do today? Like, I'm going to focus on this scene. So what's really going to happen? And then it's like an hour in, finally, I'm like, okay, I get this. I do it. But I think that, like you said, finding the time and like getting yourself into that headspace and even just doing some sort of warm up, whether it's like an unrelated writing exercise or it's just like outlining and organizing before you sit down and just go, okay, let's just start. Where is she? What'd she say? Okay, she's walking down the street, and you know, whatever it might be. And the hardest part for me in the first draft is just allowing it to be terrible. Like, I'm just it's fine. You just need to get out the action of what's happening right now. Like, she's walking down the street. She sees this penny. She picks it up. What happens next? You know, nothing like, I go back in later and add description and whatnot. Yeah. But it's like, you know, you have to kind of get yourself mentally prepared for it, right? And a lot of people think if they sit down and it's not immediately like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. Hold on. Like, right. No, that's not what happens. There's a lot of sitting around. Right now, on a project that I'm working on, there's also a lot of reading. I'm doing all this research because I want it to be historically accurate. There's like a section that's like takes place in the 1600s. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to write this unless I'm like actually writing what this was like at this moment. So I'm like researching, okay, what's it like in 1620, whatever. And really trying to get an actual like, because I thought about that. I didn't even think about trying to make it historically accurate until we were in the pandemic. And I was like, man, I hope the people that write this get this right. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, okay. Well, that means that if I'm going to write about history, I got to get it right. You know? So yeah. I didn't, you know, because I'm always thinking like, man, in 100 years, what's the love and the time of COVID going to be? Like, you know, how is that going to... How is that book or whatever that'll come out? And they'll be like, oh, did you hear about that? This is from the 2020. Oh, really? Interesting. I'm writing my thesis on that or whatever. You know what I mean? It's going to happen. Just get into it. Like, it's okay. We'll be gone. We'll be gone before they're fascinated with it. Yeah. There'll be whole sections of like sociology schools just focused on it. It's fine. But we won't have to deal with it. But there is something about like a tumultuous time in history. You know, you want to make sure mm-hmm. that you aren't just writing what the people have told you happened, but really like what really happened. What was it really like for those people when they were experiencing this?
Yeah, you get to give it a little bit more depth to them.
Yeah. But so then the idea of research and working on something can actually like give you that warm up or like make you feel like you're doing work when you're not actually writing. So like, hey, if you're like, hey man, I can't write. Great. Do some research. Maybe the research will get you going and then lead you into the next bit of writing. Right.
Yeah. And I think it's also like you were saying, it's kind of like the ritual of what you do to get ready. I remember I've got two examples of that. One was there's a place in Austin called the Writing Barn. And I used to go there. They would have like right away days, and I would take a day off of work. I would go there. They had like free coffee and stuff. And you just go there for like 6 hours with other people and you sit there and write quietly. You have lunch and you can talk about your ideas then, but then everyone goes and writes quietly. And that was great because for the first, like you said, like hour or whatever, you're like just sort of getting into it. You're like, oh, should I check my work email or no, you know, should I do this stuff or I'm going to, you know, research, you know, Christmas presents for somebody. I don't know, just sort of getting into the vibe or one of my favorite, kind of procrastinating things for that was like, I have to build a playlist for this, you know, do that for about an hour. And then something just happens and it just sort of, you know, clicks and you just start getting into it. And I will say that music does help me a lot with that, kind of getting in that mood. But yeah, it's like, okay, I've dedicated this transition time and now I have, you know, this creative time now. It's, you have that bandwidth. So that was a great place because it's like, you're there to do that. You don't have any other distractions. Everyone there is, there's something nice about the camaraderie of that too. Like other people are there. You can kind of feel that energy, the creative energy and stuff. And everyone was like so supportive. It was amazing. Don't know if they do them anymore, but somebody should do it. It was great.
Yeah, definitely. I think they do a lot of online ones now, but I don't know if they do any in person. My writing class is all on Zoom, but it's like we all chat for like an hour and then we're like, great, let's go to writing, and then just turn off our little screens and sit here and write. And then 2.5 hours later, we come back and we're like, how'd you do? Oh, we did it. We did it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. It's nice. It's like... good to have backup and some people to, you know, like to have you back, to have the community. Sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And then my second example is for so many of the things that I wrote, I would just take off work and plop my ass down at Pint House Pizza and sit at the bar and write. There's something that I love about being in like a coffee shop or a bar or something, because you can observe people. And sometimes just that will spark something, and then just get to writing, and they always have music playing, and I don't know, that was definitely something that I enjoyed, you know, either going to a coffee place or a bar and just sitting there. Usually it's always happy hour time, so nobody's like bugging you, and it's usually pretty empty, and I don't know, you get to observe the people there.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So you're currently in a different city than Austin, and we live in a world where hanging out in coffee shops and bars is less likely to happen. What's the way that you are writing and getting creative in your new digs?
Yeah. So, during the pandemic height and everything, for sure, like, working from home, not going anywhere, doing anything, we were lucky enough to have a backyard where I had a pumpkin chair, like a pumpkin swing. And so it's amazing. And I would just sit out there when it wasn't too hot and there weren't too many mosquitoes and just write. And that's kind of what I did here too, just sit down and write. So I think I always have to get out of a space. So get out of like living room, I can't do that. Get out of wherever and go somewhere else. Even if it's just like on the patio or something, like go outside and do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just some sort of environment change to get you in the mode. Yeah. I hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm like, cool, I need to find a place to go. Cause I do everything sitting at the same desk. So I'm like,
it works, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the internet exists everywhere. So all of my stuff is on Google Drive. So, of my current project that I've been working on anyway, but it's like, yeah, I guess I could go another place. That sounds fun. I've heard about coffee shops. Oh yes. I forgot those existed. Yes. That is a thing, isn't it? Yeah. Oh man. So one last thing I want to ask you. We've talked a lot about, you know, your process and writing, and thank you for sharing so many details about, you know, how you get to writing and, you know, how you learned different ways of getting it done and also submitting to festivals. Very smart tips. But for you, since you are still actively writing and, you know, managing it around, you know, your job and life and whatnot, what are you doing to creatively fill your own cup? What are you doing to inspire yourself to come up with new ideas?
That's an interesting question. I think watching good movies, watching movies that I like, that are, some are bad, some are good, just watching stuff, discovering music, honestly watching a lot of like YouTube videos of like Norway or like people walking around Portland in the snow. I don't know. Like, as long as nobody's talking and saying, hey, this is my channel, subscribe and all that stuff. on camera, because that's the worst when you're thinking you're going to watch the most peaceful hike and they're just talking for like 40 minutes straight. And you're like, I don't want to see this. I want to see the beautiful trees and everything. Okay, that was a weird rant.
I didn't know that hiking videos was even like a thing that you could watch on YouTube. That's amazing. Yes.
There's a great one. Look up Craig Adams. He does some really beautiful ones. It's him usually hiking alone with like nice music and stuff. But those are really cool because it's sort of that meditative thing, you know, because it's not dialogue. There's no talking, but you get some sort of nice visuals there. So that's cool. Oh,
wow. That is nice.
And then honestly, like a lot of times I'll, you know, while I'm doing like my artwork and stuff, I'll have ideas and be thinking through stories and stuff like that. But because it's such a long process doing the burning and stuff, it's kind of, you know, it takes a while. So you get to sit there alone and just think.
Yeah. Is the visual art that you do, is that something that like, you know, buoys the writing? Is it like, okay, I can't possibly write another word, I need to sit down and do this physical action to create this visual art? Is that like exercising different parts of your brain?
Yeah, 100%. I think, especially now with like computer screens and stuff, it's not like we're using a typewriter. It's not a visceral, tactile thing. I really, really need the like tactile thing. So I do the artwork and that just feels totally different. And then having that space where I'm doing something and I'm making something with my hands also gives me that time to think, where I wouldn't otherwise, especially if you're on a computer and you're supposed to be writing, you get distracted by so many things like social media or other people messaging you, emails, whatever. To have that just completely taken away because you're doing something so analog is great for thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great reset. And I love that you called it analog. Oh, man, I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for giving me your time and sharing your stories with us. I really appreciate you being on the podcast and taking a little bit of time to spend with me tonight.
Thanks so much for having me. This was wonderful.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.